All right, it is 10:30. We're going to call this property tax and local sales tax division meeting to order, a little different time. And the first bill that we have on the agenda, of course, is House File 1261. That is one of the three bills that, for that, you do not need to stay. So please proceed, Representative Dietrich.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, do you at this point want to at least address that people, if they're looking at the bill, they should be looking at the DE 1 amendment, the delete everything?
Very good, Representative Dietrich. We do have a DE...
Oh, it's DE 2.
DE 2 amendment, and like I said, we're going to wait until we get a few more people here. So just go ahead and proceed with that.
Okay, I would just like to make a comment about the DE 2
amendment.
Yeah,
what's the big changes there?
Big changes, they're basically technical. There was just some rewording and some reworking of some wordage. And then we also had, this bill was in government ops, and there were some suggestions made there by members, and so we took into account some of those suggestions. Just some little things about the work group and that type of thing. So, nothing major. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, would you like me to proceed?
Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Members, and Mr. Chairman, House File 1261 is the product of over six weeks of work by the State Property Tax System Benchmarks and Critical Indicators Working Group. That is a mouthful right there. This working group consisted of Ms. Baker from House Research, Ms. Schill from Fiscal Analyst, Representative Loeffler, and me. I am going to begin with an overview of the process, and like I mentioned earlier, the process sometimes drove the product that we used to develop House File 1261. And then we will address the appropriate sections of the bill as I go through the process. And so my warning to you is that we're not going through the bill or the DE 2 amendment in order. So be ready to move around. So, members of the committee, as you recall, it was about 6 weeks ago when Chairman Marquardt gave us the charge to provide state policymakers with the tools to create a more accountable and efficient property tax system. We were not sure of the direction of this charge, that this charge would bring us, but we began our work anyhow, one step at a time. We began by holding 5 public meetings. We gathered input from over 40 stakeholders, representing cities, counties, business, townships, and homeowners. And I would like to make note that there were 3 homeowners in attendance at the various meetings, and in fact, I've seen one of them here today, and I want to make sure that I say thank you to him for attending our meetings. The first step of this process was to identify the major features of our property tax system, and then to gather input from stakeholders. As stakeholders began to describe what they would like to see out of a high-quality property tax system in the state of Minnesota, they continually used terms like transparency, efficiency, stability, and simplicity. Hearing those qualitative statements over and over and over again, we began to look for a tool that defined and measured the principles of a high-quality property tax system. There were none. So we researched these property tax principles that we were hearing over and over again, and we researched them across the state, and we researched them across the nation, and we identified 7 widely held property tax principles. We developed definitions of those principles, and we turned them into a scale, which we lovingly refer to right now as the Property Tax Principle Scale. And you do have a copy of that in your folder, and it looks like this. And I'm going to stop for a moment and let Ms. Schill walk through the Property Tax Principle Scale as those principles are listed in Subdivision 2 of the DE 2 Amendment.
Ms. Schill?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm going to attempt to use the document scanner with some help, perhaps, because it's easier. You've got a couple of tables in your packet, and I want to make sure that we're referring to the right one. You have 2 tables. Okay, here we go. Yep. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah.
And how do I zoom?
Zoom in.
You have two tables in your packet. One of them talks about influential factor. The other one is entitled Property Tax Principal Scale at the top. And as Representative Dietrich mentioned, we try to get our arms around the features of the property tax system and be and then try to evaluate elements of what we included in the property tax scale. So you see seven columns. Actually, we had seven when we first did our survey, and six when we first did our survey, and we now have seven. And you'll see as the columns are labeled, we have transparency, which in your packet there is also a list of definitions, defined as a basic notion that taxpayers should know or easily identify that a tax exists, and that transparency is an important partner with tax simplification. By the way, each of these principles was researched and pulled together from a variety of different sources, including the National Conference of State Legislatures, the National Taxpayers Association, the Certified Public Accountants website, and I'm forgetting one, obviously Department of Revenue. And the source of each of these items comes from one or more of those sources. So transparency, we move to the second column, which is we describe as simple and efficient. Simplicity and efficiency permits a tax to function using fewer of society's resources. And this talks about administrative ease as well as compliance ease. For property taxes, the principle of simplicity is in conflict with other goals of progressivity. Just as an aside note, each of these items has interactions with one another. And so there are trade-offs when you strive, for example, for transparency and simplicity, but then as you move further down the scale, you find that you have perhaps influences in other areas, such as responsiveness to economic conditions and other things. As we move to the third column, we're looking at the characteristics of being equitable. This is when a tax treats similar taxpayers the same. Horizontal equity is when taxpayers with similar incomes pay similar taxes. Vertical equity is when taxpayers with different incomes pay different amount of taxes. And we're looking for some striking balance there, and these are the things that we strive for. Stable and predictable is pretty understandable, pretty self-explanatory. Just the simple production of tax revenues as expected, avoiding major swings, volatility in the process. The next column is responsiveness to economic conditions. This is an overall look at the property tax system and how well it operates. Right now, we're not extremely responsive to economic conditions, and one example of that could actually be when your property is assessed and then the amount as it goes through the process of property taxes that actually show up in your statement. We're on a two-year cycle there, and a lot can happen in 2 years. The sixth column is fosters compliance and accountability, and this once again is looking for the nature that compliance is easy to achieve, and that it's pretty identifiable where monies come in, where they go. And then finally, the column of competitiveness, and this is in the basic sense of rating of a state's tax climate, including tax burden and other kind of governmental concerns. If you take a look at this scale, one thing that we found as we went through this process, we have indicators that basically numeric indicators, effective tax rates mostly, for any item that actually spends money. So when you take a look at this scale, the bottom half we have great measures to take a look at. The top half part of the overall features of the system is where we have the weakness and where this scale in particular can become extremely useful. And that would include the features of classification, assessment, truth in taxation, and the overall rating of the property tax statement. And I will now turn to Ms. Baker, who will give more detail on how this instrument was used as we went through our work group.
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karen Baker. The representative Dietrich has asked me to talk a little bit about the research that the committee did with this scale and how it developed the working group that is in the legislation. As you stated, this scale was really a work in progress, and it was designed with everything that Michelle has just gone through and described. And what the chair thought is that she would hand these out at the meeting and actually have homework for the various people that came to the meetings. And we had 57 total responses that came back with them filled out. And what the chair asked for is when they came back, if they would discuss the various features as they, and we took a couple of different meetings to do this so that the various county and city officials and private citizens could actually walk through some of these various features of the system and say where they thought its strengths and its weaknesses were. With any system like this, you can notice, just if you look at the scale, like classification system, I mean, all we're doing is hitting kind of the high points of it because we're saying homestead, seasonal, rec, and commercial, industrial. We all know that there are many more than that, but we were trying to at least get a flavor of each of these aspects of the system and have the various people react to them. It was interesting when we got the responses back, and I'm not going to go through kind of what all came back other than the property tax statement, interestingly enough, was ranked among our highest of our numbers. It was like in the 3 to 4 range, and if you can, you know, look at your scale, you can see that we had a 0 to a 5 rating. So the property tax statement, as the various testifiers got up, said they really felt that statement really was the way it was laid out, the contents of it, what it was telling taxpayers, all the information, but it was done in a very good way, was a very, very good document. Things that ranked very, very low and probably the lowest were fiscal disparities. And that was because people thought that there was very little transparency to it. It was not simple at all. It was very, very hard to understand. and that ranked, that was below 1. So it was kind of interesting. Many of the rest of them fell kind of in the 2 category. One thing that came up, and like I say, this was a work in progress, is one thing that was not on the original one and is in your packet is that we didn't have an overall property tax system total on the ones that our responders filled out. And different people, including the Department of Revenue, suggested that we really should, because the total property tax system is sometimes or very often viewed very, very differently than each individual component. And even if you think that a lot of the components are simple and understandable and fair and equitable, when you take the whole system in its entirety, you may have a completely different feeling for that. And so that was added, and it is on your sheet for future use. Another thing that was brought up is that we didn't have the competitiveness on the original scale, and so that was added. Um, discussions that went on, it was very clear that some things were necessary to continue the work, because this working group was a very, you know, short-lived, we had 5-6 meetings, but that's a very, very short timing. And so one part of the bill addresses this by establishing a property tax working group. That working group, though, was set up so that it would only have a 2-year life, so it is not like a commission or anything. It's an advisory group. And it's on page 2, starting on line 14 of the Delete Everything. And it was really established with kind of 3 important things that continually came up through all of the discussion of the testifiers. One of it is just ways to simplify the property tax system, and how can one make it more understandable so that one can explain it to taxpayers and explain it to policymakers as well. The second thing that came up continually was how long our property tax cycle is. And part of that is related to the simplicity of it, because the whole timing, everything has to have a certain length of time in order to produce all the various pieces, and so that adds to its length. But so that second point that was set up as a goal was that the property tax calendar, how could it be shortened, or ask the advisory group to look into it to see if there's anything that could be done to shorten that process. And the last thing was to look at all of the cost versus benefits of all the various pieces of the system. Some of the things in particular, maybe some of the credits that have gotten on the property tax system, cost far more to administer than we even pay back in the actual reimbursements or credits. And for the working group to make some just advisory recommendations on maybe ways to eliminate them or change them, or maybe accomplish, hopefully, as much of the legislative goal as possible, but do it in a simpler fashion. The working group consists of 12 members, 2 House members, 1 appointed from the chair of the House Tax Committee would appoint both of them, but one would come from each of the parties, the majority and the minority party. The same in the Senate. There'll be 2 senators appointed by Senate tax chair, one from the majority and one from the minority. The commissioner of revenue or a designee. And then one person from each of the various associations, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the League of Cities, Association of Townships, the Chamber, and from the Assessing Officers Association. And then 2 homeowners, 1 over 65 and 1 under 65, so that it has the viewpoint from both of those age groups. The commissioner would, a revenue would chair the first meeting, and then the working group would select a chair, and the working group would meet at the call of the chair and serve without any compensation. A provision got put in there which deals with the fact that the meeting, or the working group, would not have to be abide by the open meeting law. That comes up as a question all the time, and so this clarifies that they're not subject to that open meeting law, so that there isn't any issue of penalties. And the newspapers are okay with this language. That was one issue that got raised right away as to whether or not the newspapers like that language. The 2-year working group would then make advisory recommendations, and that's all that they would be, is just advisory, to the House and the Senate tax chair by February 1st, 2011. And at that time, the working group would end, and this particular subdivision would come out of statute. And when we talk later about the resolution that the tax committee would make, they would look at what this advisory group, advisory recommendations that they made.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. I would just like to make a couple of comments. First of all, I hope that you understand that this property tax principles scale was tested, and we rewrote it, we reworked it many, many, many times. And we are still considered a work in progress, but we do think that it is now an important piece of the indicators of a high-quality property tax system. But we realized that you can't, that this was not the only tool, that there are many other tools out there right now that people use to judge, to evaluate the tax system and the property tax system. So we thought it was important in our bill to outline those other tools that policymakers use. And so today we would just like to take a second to highlight Subdivision 3, where we have now included the property tax principal scale along with the other 10 very useful tools that we now use. So Michelle will do that.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Before we do that, we've got a quorum now. So Representative Loeffler moves to lay over House File 1261 for possible inclusion into the property tax division report, and then Representative Loeffler, would you like to offer the DE2 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I would be honored to offer.
Well, very good. Sure. Representative Loeffler moves to move the DE2 amendment. Any discussion on that? There's a few members that came in here late. Could you talk about the changes, Representative Dietrich, and DE2 amendments? What are the major ones?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really, the changes in the DE2 amendment are just basic wording changes, and then this bill has also been in the Government Operations Committee, and they made a few suggestions on more specifically the working group, and so some minor changes. There were just many, so we thought it would be much easier to be working off of a delete everything amendment as opposed to going through each of the changes. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Any other questions on the DE2 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. So please proceed.
Thank you. And now, Michelle, like I mentioned before, we'll just go through Subdivision 3 briefly and talk about the other indicators of a high-quality property tax system.
Mr. Chair and members, the indicators that you see in Subdivision 3 has its origin from the table that I have on the monitor right now. We won't go into a whole lot of detail there, but basically, because the property tax system has elements both at the state level and at the local level, it's important to be able to follow indicators at both the state and local level. And so you'll see issues of governance, issues of property taxes and their overall nature, and then some of the things that were passed to us in our charge to take a look at things like price of government and the tax incidence report and such like that. So basically here on this chart you'll have what we identified of the system and then the tools to go along with it. Now, we didn't think that this would be something that would be easy to follow and easy for legislatures to bring along with them. So we created a different kind of tool that has a number of, I would say, easier kind of features to go with it. But you'll take a look at the major indicators as listed in Subdivision 3, including the property tax, principal scale, price of government report, tax incidence report, tax expenditure budget, state tax rankings, property tax levy plus aid data, and we did talk about this somewhat to see if there were other components that we should be adding into that, and found that for application in the overall legislative process to go further than levy plus aid might be a challenging factor to produce information that would be timely in the decision-making process. Effective tax rates as a percent of market value and equalized effective tax rates. That part is important depending, and you can see on the chart that I had up just a moment ago, effective tax rates are helpful for taxpayer incidents, but when you're working with local governments, for example, or county governments, you want to take a look at the equalized effective tax rate. Assessment sales ratio study, that was included for a number of different better local kinds of measures. The VOS database, and as you can tell, We haven't yet seen results of the VOS database. That will be coming from Department of Revenue within the next month or so. Revenue estimates and state fiscal notes to give an idea of the cost at the state level, and then local impact notes with improved analysis to get a better cost of the local level. Now, I'm going to put before you the notebook that I have right here and how thick it is. That is a compilation of all the indicators that we just went through, minus the sales ratio study, which is about 1,200 pages. And for legislators to actively use this on a regular basis, I don't think you're going to be taking that around a committee with you every time that you have a tax bill or property tax bill. So what we proposed to do, and then we thought, okay, what would be a better way? Should we have a top 10 list, which actually is what you saw over here? If you add them up, it's actually 11, but if you look at the effective tax rate and equalized tax rate, we kind of smushed those together. But still, this is not all that useful of an item to look at in a contextual manner. So with some consultation with friends over at Department of Revenue, we came up with this other item that you will see in your packet, and we call this the dashboard analysis. And this is not a BMW, this is not a Yugo, it's someplace in between. We'd like to think that it is something that when you enter your car, you know that you need to look occasionally at the fuel gauge. You know that you need to check the speedometer when you're on the road, but not necessarily when you're not. And that you need to know a number of different other kinds of measures as you operate your car. Well, the same thing should apply to our property tax system, and this is the set of elements that we came up with. Progressivity was a major concern and should be, especially when you're talking property taxes. So you have your speedometer right here in the middle of your dashboard. And we have, obviously, we're talking about the nature of the property tax system. All property tax systems are in total are regressive in nature. And because we just received the tax incident study report, was the day before yesterday, we have two indicators on here giving you Minnesota 2004 and where our property tax system was at is a negative 0.178. And our update from 2 days ago from Minnesota 2006 is that we have moved more so along the regressive lines, and the overall property tax system is now measured at negative 0.238. So we're kind of moving away from even having a neutral descriptor characteristic of our property tax system. So that's where we are with respect to progressivity in the middle. As you can see at the very bottom of this dashboard, we have placed the property tax principal scale. And each of the seven measures that we have there. On the right-hand side, you see cost of administration. That would be either at the state or local or local level, depending on the nature of the bill that would be before you. And on the left-hand side, taxpayer impact, effective tax rate. That could also, if you're talking an LGA bill, that would be the equalized effective tax rate. So that this particular chart would be interchanged depending on the nature of the bill. And the overall indicators are right at the top of the chart, price of government and national rankings. And we felt that was very important to have at the top to kind of keep as a baseline measurement of how well we're doing. You can tell in fiscal 09, and I try to get as current information as possible. Price of government, two lines there, measure it between 2008 and 2009, give you an idea of the direction that we're going. And our national rankings, both in property taxes per capita, we're at 28th. Percent of personal income, we're at 35th. And with respect to system simplicity, we're
ranking at the bottom, folks. Our Minnesota's property tax system is one of the most complex in the nation, and that's something that we really don't think about on a regular basis. And so this is our proposal of the overall indicators. You see them listed in the bill, but the idea is to put this to work on a regular basis.
Thank you, Michelle.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes. You can see what we try to do is capture the essence of all of the major indicators on our property tax system on a one-page dashboard type concept, one-stop shopping, in other words. But we still needed to answer the question, how do we use these indicators to help policymakers make the property tax system more accountable and more efficient? So what we did was, in Subdivision 5 of the bill, you will see that we require on or before March 1st, 2011, and every other year thereafter, the House and Senate Tax Committees will review the major indicators as outlined in Subdivision 3, and they will take the recommendations of the work group, at least the first time around, as Ms. Baker described, and they will assess, using that dashboard type concept, they will assess the accountability and the efficiency of the current property tax system. After doing so, they will prepare a resolution with some targets and some benchmarks to be used as a guide for policymakers and taxpayers during the development of the budget process for that current biennium. I thought that this part of the bill needed some sort of an example. So as we talked about that, looked at the dashboard, we created one of our own examples. And we said, after evaluating the property tax principle scale, and you look at the rating that Minnesota property taxes are 49th when ranked in system complexity, a benchmark might be that we want to simplify the property tax system. Secondly, another benchmark might be is that we want greater transparency and efficiency in assessing the property tax calendar. And so as a result, like we have done in our own little work group, what we did was we have created a work group that would address both of those issues. And so that is one example of how all of this work can be melded together in assessing the property tax system and then creating benchmarks to correlate to the indicators. So we, once again, still plagued with how do we make this applicable, how do we make this real in the real life of what we do here. We also, in Subdivision 7, have another what I call real life application of the property tax principle scale, and Ms. Schill would like to describe that a little bit.
Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, reflected in both Subdivision 6 and Subdivision 7 is an application of what we're after in the application, in using the property tax principle scale. You should have four yellow sheets with you, and these are just basic examples of what a revenue estimate would look like using the property tax principle scale. And the first three examples are for bills that don't exist, any town TIF. So example number five, number one will show you the application of this scale to a TIF bill. Example number two takes into consideration the impact of the senior citizen property tax deferral program. And just to march through some of these, the idea is, as proposed in this bill, yeah, exactly, help fill it out. The household income limit would be increased to 80,000. Age requirement would be changed. Now, this is just an example, but when things like that go through the property tax principle scale, transparency is somewhat less because it is more difficult to judge which households actually can take advantage of this provision, and so for other taxpayers it makes it less transparent. Equal with simple and efficient is that this provision adds more to what must be done to administer the program, so it becomes less easy to follow, less equitable. Persons of the same kind of income level might not be treated the same because of this provision. Stable and predictable. This is pretty neutral. The program already exists, and so it is a tweaking of the program, so its impact on the actual revenues coming in would be pretty neutral. Responsive to economic conditions. This is part of what we were talking about with trade-offs, in that okay, if you're going to be less transparent and less simple in the change in the law, your trade-off is that you do, this particular bill wants to be more responsive than the current system actually is. Fosters account compliance and accountability. Once again, the program already exists, so we know how to track it. And then finally, in the competitive column, it is neutral as well. So you can see the application in this particular instance with senior deferral. Example number three takes into account a change in the agricultural homestead rate. And once again, you can see the rankings: transparency less, simplicity less, equitability less, stability neutral, once again responsive to economic conditions is more. Accountability and compliance is neutral, and competitiveness is more. And then finally, example number four is Mr. Chair's bill that we heard in committee. When was it? Yesterday?
Last week.
And you can see this is current. This is for House File 511. And this is the seasonal rec residential property tax deferral program. This would be a new program. So the transparency would, ranking would be less. Simplicity and efficiency would be less. The equitability would be less. But once again, we're going to look at this in terms of responsiveness to economic conditions and competitiveness. This is the trade-off that the chair is making with respect to the tax principles.
Ms. Phil, my bill looked better last week when I presented it. I thought it was much better bill than this.
But this is how, and it will take some time to get used to the tool. We've got it printed right here, you're not seeing the actual scale 0 to 5. What we decided to do is, instead of having numeric rankings, just have verbal or adjectives indicating what is going on here. So that would be a use of the scale with respect to a revenue estimate.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beatrice.
Thank you. And I would just like to comment, when the chair was presenting his bill, I said to Michelle, I said, do we have our tax principle scale here? And she said, she looked for it, and she said, no, we don't have it. And I said, just quickly, you know, from what we remember, you evaluate his bill. And so as we were going through it, I thought, I don't think this is such a good idea to share this with him. But then as we were talking about the bill, I said, now, if the author of a bill wanted to raise the rating, they could modify their bill. For example, under equitable, if he would have had an income level, an income component, that would have changed that rating to more. And so that got the chair a little more excited when we shared the rating with him. But the whole principle is to help policymakers create better policy, and I think that this does demonstrate that this tool can be used to do that. Thank you. Now, we have one other piece of the bill that we need to talk about, and that is local revenue notes. And Ms. Schill is also going to talk through that.
Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll go back to our dashboard analysis. In the right-hand side, you see cost of administration and an example of a measurement there. And what we did is that we took a look at revenue estimates, fiscal notes, which are items that indicate cost impact at the state level. Obviously, revenue estimate, change in revenue, up or down. And then fiscal notes are the actual administrative cost, up or down, at the state level. Recognizing that the property tax system also has administrative components at the local level. We looked for measures on how we work with that. And the thing that we found in law were local impact notes, of which we don't usually generate many. And we have to find a way to better identify the cost of administration at the local level with the changes in laws that we do. It's a weakness. We asked Department of Revenue, what kind of information do you gather on this? And the answer was very, very little. They work very closely with overall responsibilities that the state has, but the cost of administration at the local level, that is not their purview. They don't have much information. The local note element is in place for when we are changing laws, and it is up to each of the taxpayers to request information on local notes. We also looked at different resources online to get this information, and they just basically don't exist. And so what the bill is looking at and contains in Section 7 is it takes a look at the current amount of money that we pay each year, $207,000, to the Department of Finance, now MMB, for the preparation of local notes, and that we want more participation from the local governments themselves in this process. So we have a way to better get an idea of what the cost administratively is. We had some information, for example, on truth and taxation hearings, and that information only came from a study that was required, I think it was 2 years ago, where we have an idea of how much it costs to hold a truth and taxation hearing, how much the advertising is, and such. But you can tell from our sheet that that's only a portion of what actually goes on at the local level for the cost of administration. And so item 7 in the bill is looking to fill that gap so we have some way to help make this dashboard analysis more informative and a better working kind of situation.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we are basically done.
Right.
I want to first of all say thank you to you, though, for allowing me to chair this work group. And I also want to thank Representative Loeffler for participating, and obviously Ms. Phil and Ms. Baker. It was, it's been a huge learning experience for myself. The other thing I want to thank you for is the time allotment today. It was very generous of you to allow this much time to cover the bill like this, but I think that you can tell that there was just a lot to cover, so it was really gracious of you to allow this much time. But in closure, what I would just like to say is that I think that the property tax principle scale and the information that this bill generates can help legislators, policymakers, homeowners, everybody, people trying to assess the property tax system. This provides another tool to help them assess the property tax system. The information that is gathered in this bill, I think, will be valuable in future years for people like ourselves trying to have an impact on the current property tax system. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair, in closing, and if you don't mind, I made a limerick with respect to this bill, and I would like to share it with you. Because it is St. Patty's Day. You asked us to look at some benchmarks, so we searched and surveyed and we earmarked. The results are here and hopefully clear, so please make this dashboard your trademark.
We would like a copy of that. So, well, this is outstanding work by your working group, Representative Dietrich, and everyone else who worked so hard. And, you know, there's a lot of accountability here, and that was probably the main task, is to provide more accountability for policymakers as we look at our overall property tax system. But I, you know, look at what you did here, even though it made my bill look less appealing. It raises the discussion and consideration of these bills to a new level, where you actually have a new language. And to me, this would focus more the discussion on policy than politics. And there's always going to be politics, but
right.
I do think that is lacking at times as we look at bills, and we sometimes look at the runs to see who it benefits or it doesn't, without
looking at the concepts of just how good a policy this bill may or may not be. And I think that raises the level. One other area I just really like is that section, subdivision 5. So you're going to have the tax committee looking at these benchmarks every 2 years when they come back and talking about them and basically setting direction of what they want to do the next 2 years. It doesn't bind anyone, but at least discuss this when you look at price of government, the suits index, how well the assessors are doing, staying between the line, you know, these principles and all those type of things. I just think it just, when you look at accountability, at least it forces those policymakers are going to be most in charge of this tax bill to look at what type of a system do we want, how is it benefiting our taxpayers out there. And I just think it increases accountability. So I just think it was a wonderful job that you did. And open it up before we, yes, Representative Dietrich.
Yes, I just did want to remind you that Eric Willett from the Department of Revenue would like to testify.
Very good. Should we, any comments right now before we listen to Mr. Willett, any of the testifiers? If not, Mr. Willett, Department of Revenue. And Mr. Willett, how many fingerprints of yours are on this, these documents that have come forward for us?
Mr. Chair, there are a few. We had a great opportunity to visit with the author as her proposal was being shaped. So we did appreciate working with her. It was very helpful. I will keep my comments brief. The Department of Revenue staff, I think, has had growing concern over time with the complexity of the system and our ability to manage it, both at the state level and the ability of counties to effectively administer it at the local level. So we think this just is a potential tool to have a very robust discussion about those issues as proposals come up over time. So we think in that respect, it's, the goals are very good. There's a lot of consequences of complexity in the system that we could talk for a long time about, but in brief, there's problems when taxpayers have no chance to understand why their tax is what it is. There's the risk of administrative mistakes or different interpretations of law. It's very expensive to administer when the more complex it is, and those sorts of issues. So we think adding this kind of information can be helpful as we, as you all measure various proposals. I just want to talk specifically about the part that would impact me most directly, which is the scale at the bottom of the revenue estimates. Again, we think this is a really good thing. It's, we've sort of talked about how we could get more of this sort of information into the revenue estimates process. So we're very supportive of giving this a shot, but I did want to lay out a couple of minor concerns just to get them on the table. One is that I think, as with any new endeavor, we're not exactly sure how it's going to work and how well we're going to be able to do it. Obviously, our goal will be to figure out how to apply this uniformly and neutrally to all proposals going forward. I suspect there might be a few hiccups along the way where there'll be some disagreement about our judgment on these particular scales. So I think we should all just expect that there's going to be some of that give and take, at least early on, as we figure out how to make this work. We certainly would spend some time in the interim, if this is passed, testing it with existing proposals and communicating with staff and the working group, if the working group is also established, just to make sure that everyone's comfortable with how we think this might roll out. And then secondly, this adds a responsibility that we want to take seriously, so we want to put some serious thought into, and it adds basically work to our most busy people at their busiest time of year, which is right now. So one consequence of this might be that revenue estimates are a little bit slower coming out. We did put in a fiscal note for a half staff person. I don't think it would take a half staff person the whole year, but it would take somebody when we don't have anybody. So that was just to acknowledge that there would be some added burden to the division. Depending on what the totality of things are in the end of the tax bill, it may very well, you know, wash out with other things that are going on in the bill. But we wanted to get on the record that, you know, there is a burden to us for doing this, but that doesn't mean we don't want to give it a try. We certainly think this is the right sort of information to get out there, and we are a little bit daunted, but look forward to trying to provide this information. So,
any questions? Mr. Ouellette, I really appreciate that testimony and your help and work with this work group. Thank you. Anyone else with any comments?
Thank you.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can certainly understand how this could be a very useful tool as we evaluate proposals that are coming forward, but I also understand the difficulty in the Revenue Department being able to efficiently and effectively make this kind of an evaluation. Representative Dietrich, in your discussions in the work group, did you talk at all about how local units of government might be able to use this as they make decisions with regard to property taxes in their jurisdiction?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lanning, we did not, I don't think to the level that you are talking about, but what we did use the property tax principal scale to survey the local units of government, cities and counties, as to see how they viewed the property tax system and what improvements they used that scale as to send messages as to where we needed to improve. So,
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, maybe that's the next step here, but when we talk about the importance of our critical indicators, certainly we, from a state perspective, need to monitor the critical indicators that revolve around the property tax system. But I think local units of government need to do the same thing. Let me give you a couple of examples that have major impact on property tax decisions at the local level. Communities need to monitor what percent of their tax base is in a tax increment district. And if those numbers get higher, that has a potential negative impact on their property tax receipts, and local communities ought to be monitoring that. Another important critical indicator that local governments need to monitor is what's happening with payment of special assessments. And I'm aware of communities that have had collections on special assessments fall through the floor, where they're only getting 50% of what they need to collect in order to make their interest and principal payments on bonds. And that indicator has a very substantial impact on local property taxes. And I don't mean to complicate this, but I think another side of this whole issue on critical indicators is what local units of government need to identify as critical indicators that have also very significant impact on effective property tax rates. So I offer that as another thing that needs to be looked at.
And Representative Lanning, that might be something more in my working group, requiring that under a critical indicator of financial management, if some of those things you mentioned, where the state would require that as part of the benchmarks. Sir. Yeah. Points well,
yeah.
Well made.
Excellent. Thank you.
Representative Mulry, were you on
Mr. Chair, I was just going to, at one point, it was brought up there were 49th and Simplicity, and then lumping Simple and Efficient in together. I'm very concerned about an efficient system. To quote Rhett Butler, I don't give a damn if we're the simplest thing in the world, because if it's a good system, to quote somebody else, what was it, Damon Reagan said, for every problem there's a simple solution and it's always wrong.
Representative Rhett Butler from Gone with the Wind?
Right.
Okay. Wow, that's going back. Very good. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, I would just like to make sure that Representative Mulry knows that we know that there are trade-offs in this, in the principal scale, but we still think that the discussion is good to have, and that you have to, at least if you're choosing to be complex, then you at least have to know that you are complex and when you are making the system more complex. And if that's a conscientious decision, so be it. So, thank you. But you're right, and a lot of those can be looked like that.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would care to testify for or against House File 1261? Please come forward. And please state your name.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rob Bill-Eppert. I'm the Assistant Hennepin County Assessor, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And as an assessor, it's good to know that we're involved in the second most complicated process in the nation. But MAO does appreciate the opportunity to provide input into this process as a stakeholder. As property tax assessors, we embrace a critical role to individual taxpayers in their communities. Our goal is to contribute to the public understanding of the property tax assessment function. In that light, we believe that this property tax principal scale and major indicators will serve to help the process when evaluating proposed property tax legislation. And we look forward to contributing in this effort, and we fully support this bill. Also, MAO appreciates the opportunity to participate on the working group. We feel that we have some valuable information that contributes to the success. We support the inclusion of the local impact notes of Subdivision 7. MAO attempts to alert legislators about this, the effects of proposed legislation. We believe this renewed focus on empirical data provided by these local impact notes will help to give a big picture viewpoint for policymakers when addressing this. That's all I had to say, and we appreciate the opportunity for input.
Thank you very much, and thank you for working with the group, too. Thank you. Anyone else care to testify for or against? If not, Representative Rothway renews her motion to lay over House File 1261 as amended for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report. So thank you very much, you. Representative Dietrich. Representative Daphne, I don't see him. So we're going to move to the Chair's bill, House File 479. Representative Winchesky, would you care to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair, members. I'd like to move House File 479 for possible inclusion in the division report.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a handout that I was hoping to give the pages here, if I might. Thank you. Members who serve on this committee know that I've offered this before, and this is a study of the Metropolitan Fiscal Disparities Program. And, you know, I'll just make the, I think Ms. Baker and the work of Representative Dietrich sort of made the case for this bill inadvertently, because on all those measures, this program, almost all the measures, this program failed. But that's not why I brought it forward, and I brought it forward again because I do want to remind members this bill passed in 1971, pre-LGA. It was not part of the Minnesota Miracle. People think it was. It wasn't. There were court cases around it, and it started in 1975, and not a word of the bill has been changed since then. There is no other aid and credit program in the Minnesota property tax system that I'm aware of that has not even been tinkered with. This is one that has not. We've gone through major overhauls of HACA and LGA, categorical aid, county aid. This is something that I don't know everyone's afraid to touch or look at because there's winners and losers. And I think if we would study it, the people who perceive that they would lose if we studied it may in fact get even more money. I mean, nobody really knows that, but this program has not been studied in any significant way since its inception and has not been changed. So that's basically the bill. The handout I wanted to point people to is if you look at the first couple pages of the law that was enacted in 1971, you look at that purpose statement and you just read those six items that's in front of you. The purpose of this bill, the Charles R. Weaver Metropolitan Revenue Distribution Act, and it lays out these principles that it's supposedly achieving. It's pretty difficult to argue that this program is achieving these purposes. There's a few of them that maybe is a little. So, I mean, the purpose of the program and what's happening with the program are kind of difficult to line up in people's heads, I think. It is a tax redistribution program, plain and simple. And if we're going to distribute property tax base or wealth, we should do it in a way that makes sense. So I know that it supplements the LGA program. It makes our LGA state dollars go much farther because we have this. Because if you're in the metro and you're a recipient city, and let's say your recipient city is supposed to get $20 million based on need, but First Fiscal Disparities gives your city 10, you know, that 10, that state appropriation, goes a lot further. So it spreads it out further around greater Minnesota, and when you actually even see the net impact of this program, there's a benefit to greater Minnesota by having this program exist. And so my intent here is not to get rid of this program. You could enhance it, you could diminish it, it's just calling into question the fundamental, you know, starting blocks when this started. You know, why was it 40% of CI? Why wasn't it 30? Why wasn't it 50? I mean, it's hard to know why people thought this was the best way to go. And I just, as I said, I just passed out the first couple pages, for example, on the third page of this handout, and the bill is long. I could have copied the whole chapter, but on the third page, under subdivision 8, when we're going through the definitions, for example, why is New Prague omitted? Why is Northfield omitted? I mean, I'd just like to know. And I think as you read through, you know, what's gone on, all of these things are called into question. Probably the biggest piece for me is, why did we grandfather in all the commercial industrial property tax base at the inception of the law, and say that everything that was built before 1971, we're just going to not count it? You know, my guess is that was a political move. Because I think if you counted it back then, you had a lot less money coming into the urban core. So you take that off and you just don't count it. You know, maybe it was an urban planning issue. Well, those things are already there, and this is supposedly about sprawl, so let's not count it for that. You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I was in elementary school. This has not been changed since some of you, before you were born. I think that's just a complete abdication of the property tax committee members over time for all these years' responsibility to look at a major tax and aid credit program creating hundreds of millions of dollars a year and not have anyone take a look at it. So I just, you know, that's where I'm at. As I said, Representative Dietrich kind of, you know, put it up against the principles. And by the way, I think that bill is fantastic. But, you know, I do think there's all the other questions that come into play that, you know, that there was one side of the equation measured and not the other. You know, local fiscal condition versus need in the formula. There were things like, what kind of burden is accounted for because you have a large commercial industrial base? For example, in LGA, we have a factor for that. We let large regional centers get more aid because they have an overburden as it relates to having a lot of the burdens that go with large CI, being a job base for other areas, the congestion that goes with that. So just on kind of all the measures we look at in the formulas, we have not done anything about it. I want to thank the chair because last year he did include it in his division report, and we did take it to conference, and I will admit I'm the one who was willing to forego it. Because we had so much agitation, kind of accidentally, by four members, when the Mall of America proposed to use this fund, which we know is for tax-based equalization, to buy something. And so the legislature, I think, learned a lot about fiscal disparities because of that proposal. The legislature learned, wait a minute, that's not a pot of money for giving out to people. It's one community giving part of its tax base to another, and that's what it's for. So I think the legislature kind of had a study in their heads a little bit, collectively as a group, learning, oh, what is that esoteric thing that we don't know about, and should we build, you know, malls with it and Viking stadiums? And as people understood that it decreased their LGA around the state and did other things, people said no. You know, it is a tax redistribution program in the property tax system. That's not what it's for. So I thought that was a great sort of accidental study, where a lot of people started understanding what this program did. But beyond that, it has not been studied. It wasn't changed. All that happened in the last biennium is people decided to not touch it. But it continues, I think, to beg the question, you know, well, when are we ever going to look at it? Because it is hundreds of millions of dollars of property tax base moving around. And so I guess that's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think last year we had a local government aid run done, didn't we, on the impact of fiscal austerity? And I think that's on the website. If I remember the last time under local government aid, I think it's one of the ones. So if you want to take a look at that impact around the state, I think you can just go to the website and see that. Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I ask my question, you didn't seem to pick up on the reference to why Rhett Butler today. Rhett Butler said, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, while he was standing at Scarlett O'Hara's home, which is the estate was named Tara, which is the name of the ancient home of the Irish king. So there was quite appropriate today.
Very good, Representative Mulry. No, I didn't catch that at all. Very nice. Nicely done, Representative Mulry.
And for a chair who doesn't even know how to spell his last name, according to some of my constituents who have the same name, Paul Marquardt. Chair Lanchevsky, I just wondered if you were trying to get at an easier way to get at the fact that we should, without going through all this, we could just create a funnel from Bloomington to St. Paul for money, or...
You don't have to answer that.
Well, you know, Representative Mullery's point is well taken. You know, it is a wealth redistribution program, and that's okay. But based on what, and how do we measure it, and what are the needs, and if you did bring in the pre-7, if you did bring all the CI that was grandfathered in its inception, it may be that you would not hurt the urban core. You may say, and it's right to give them an extra count for burden, because there are extra needs, as we do in the LGA formula. But, you know, I tried to kind of think through how that would happen if you ungrandfathered the CI that started in. I think it would help Minneapolis a lot, would be my guess, and the converse. I think it would help St. Paul. I think the cities would be affected differently, but that would be a discussion for studying it. You know, how would that play out? But, you know, part of it, when I first introduced this bill, I'm glad you mentioned the St. Paul thing. Honestly, it was because a former mayor of St. Paul, who's not the mayor now, offered in his budget a large property tax refund. And so all the cities who were contributing to that city said, excuse me? I mean, if you can refund the people a property tax refund, we'd like this little ferry back. That didn't pass. But it was amazing to think that you had this tax base shifting going on to the point that we had a mayor of a major city, not yours, attempting to provide a significant property tax refund check to every resident in that community. Yet this program was continuing to shift aid around, and I think that nobody ever intended it for things like that, so a mayor could give a refund check, sort of like the DESE check, but for a mayor. You know, and that sort of got people thinking about how much could you really abuse this, and what was it really for? So, you know, I think when I was a freshman, I was naive and came here from the city that gives the most, because they're like, yeah, you know, this isn't right, and then you learn more, and you go, well, we do have a larger net tax capacity, and so those cities can contribute more. But it should be based on something that makes sense, that doesn't have grandfathers. We've ungrandfathered things, or maybe we would say we should keep them. But we should measure local fiscal condition, and we should talk about where that money should go. But again, I do think we made headway as a group when lots of legislators who've never cared about what this program was or even ever heard of it before kind of got focused on it when they realized that means they either got less fiscal disparities or they got less local government aid, because part of the pool was going to be spent on something. So I think that was significant, and that's why in conference committee I was sort of willing to let it go, because it seemed like enough for, you know, everybody for a while. But I still think, you know, we're in a position now with a lot of thoughtful people, both you as the chair and the lead here, that have shown a willingness to examine these major aid and credit system and rework them, and this is one that still has not been touched.
You good, Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry. one item off topic, and then a couple of requests. Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanchevsky, I've never publicly questioned your judgment, I have to seriously question why you would hold a 6 p.m. committee hearing on St. Patrick's Day. So I am outraged. But in seriousness, the two pieces of information, one, if we could get the, I don't want to call it winners and losers, but the who receives or who contributes to the fiscal disparity fund, I'm embarrassed, but I don't know that. If I could, maybe the committee members could get that list.
Very good.
And then secondly, that link to, you said there's a link somewhere about what the LGA runs would be without fiscal disparities. Did I understand that right? If I was not on the committee last year, if we could get those two links, that would be...
Very good. We will get those out.
Okay, and then my question for the chairman, a serious question, is am I correct in saying that when the need calculation is done for LGA, that the fiscal disparities contribution actually reduces your need, so therefore other cities outside the metro area get a higher LGA allocation? Is that correct?
I don't think they get a higher, more than they don't get a higher appropriation. What it makes is a state appropriation go further. So if we as a legislature are going to spend $400 million on LGA or $500 or $600, we can give more people stuff into the formula, into greater Minnesota, if fiscal disparities first comes in and pays a portion of the need in the 7-county metro. So yes and no, and I guess I'd let Mr. Hines kind of correct me if he thinks that's wrong. And if Mr. Chair, if you'd be willing, I do think Mr. Hines could give the committee a 10-second snapshot on kind of who the winners and losers are in a rough way. You know, there's not, I think it's about 30 cities, isn't it, who are contributors, and it's not very many.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lentesky, to get to the first matter first on LGA, I think the way you've described it is accurate, that it does make the... you do take into account how much tax base they're receiving from fiscal disparities when you determine their ability to pay, so it does make it go. A city that's getting a lot from fiscal disparities wouldn't get as much LGA because of the fiscal disparities, and that's what our study found, was that does end up sending some money more to greater Minnesota, because the metro cities that are less property wealthy get some from fiscal disparities. To the second point, a very quick overview of who wins and loses is I think that the number that I'm familiar with is like 38 cities in the metro that are net contributors, and there's about 150 or so that are net gainers, 160 very roughly. Generally, we think of the sort of second ring suburbs maybe would be the best way to say who the major contributors are, especially in Hennepin County, Dakota County, kind of all around the metro, more that ring. And especially the big gainers are the city of St. Paul that's been mentioned, and then Anoka County tends to be where a lot of those municipalities are net winners. But there's certainly some of both kinds scattered throughout the metro. And we can easily produce. I have that list. I can easily make that available.
Great. Anything else, Representative?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If not, anyone here for or against House File 479? Testify for or against? Not any closing comments, Representative?
I don't think those are the committee time.
So would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, please.
Representative Lentesky renews her motion to lay over House File 479 for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we now have Representative Daphne and House File 467. This is our last bill. Representative Emmer's bill will not be heard today. So I will move that House File 467 be laid over for possible inclusion into the division report. Representative Daphne, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for the hearing, and I appreciate the flexibility as I was juggling other bill hearings. Representative Garofalo, I can appreciate your concern about the 6 o'clock hearing on St. Patrick's Day, but at least it's about green acres. just let it sink in for a moment. I'll get down to business. Please proceed. All right, Representative Markert and members, House File 467. Is an attempt to provide some assistance to our small Main Street businesses across Minnesota. It does so strictly within a revenue-neutral way, strictly within the statewide business property tax. By relieving values of property in that lowest tier, below $150,000, from the statewide business property tax. Now, I'll be very clear. This is a shift within the statewide business property tax. Properties with lower values will receive a property tax benefit. So your Main Street businesses, bluntly, downtown businesses in Minneapolis will see a property tax increase off of this. Having introduced this in past years, I know what the staff will say is it shifts from small business to large business, and it shifts from greater Minnesota to the urban core. But I think in this current difficult economic time, we see that small businesses are pinched harder. They've got less margin to work with. And if we in the state can provide some assistance to them, I think it's appropriate that we consider that seriously. Mr. Chair and members, with me today is Mr. John Kolstad. He's a small business owner, happens to be in my district, and is, I believe, a board member of the Metro Independent Business Association. He can speak to that further.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kolstad.
Good morning, and thank you. My name is John Kolstad. I'm a small business person from Minneapolis, being just under 5'7" and getting shorter every year. I'm the president of Milton Music, a record distribution company, which is a national company that sells to 49 states and two countries. I've been in business 29 years. I'm also known as Papa John Kolstad, musician, recording artist, touring performer, and I've done that for over 40 years. Some of you may recall from my days on the Portable Computing Machine. I've been studying the importance of small business to the economy since the early 90s when I was a member of the Lake Street Council for about 8 years, and that was a very big issue for us. And for those who don't know, Lake Street is about a six-mile business district that is primarily small independent businesses, and when I was on the council, they said that they had more revenue a year than the Mall of America. I'm a founding member of the Metropolitan Independent Business Alliance, and I'm currently serving on the board. Our voting members are exclusively small independent businesses, and our territory is a greater metropolitan area. The Independent Business Alliances are forming all over the United States, and the purpose of this is to give voice to small independent businesses. There are three purposes primarily for our organization, but I just want to address the main one here, and that is to give voice to small independent businesses, to both public and elected officials, about public policy that affects small business. Although we are a metropolitan organization, I do believe that my comments really are those of the positions of all small independent businesses, or at least most throughout the state of Minnesota and across the nation. I want to say that my comments are my own and do not represent an official statement by the Metropolitan Independent Business Alliance, because we just haven't made that decision yet, but I do believe that what I have to say represents the goals and concerns of our organization. Small business has provided over 50% of employment in the United States of America. In the latest study in Minnesota by the Minnesota Health Research Service, 90% of new jobs were created by small business. In Minnesota, there are over 550 small businesses. My figures come from the SBA, the Small Business Administration, and from your own Health Research Service, which, by the way, does a great job. Clearly, small business is the economic engine of Minnesota and the United States. I'm here today because small business is severely stressed. And I want to add, through really no fault of their own, we know what's been going on in the country and in the world economically. Revenues are down sharply while costs keep going up and up. You've heard about businesses that are too big to fail. I think that it is small business that is the only business that is too big to fail. Government needs to help small businesses, because small businesses are big businesses. At least collectively, we represent big business. There are two major issues for small business that can be affected by public policy. One is the skyrocketing cost of property taxes, and the second is the skyrocketing cost of health insurance. I am pleased that this body today is looking at the property tax relief for small independent business. We are not looking for a handout. We just want a level playing field. Property taxes are not just aggressive. They fall disproportionately on small, freestanding buildings, which is the home of small independent businesses primarily. I've read two studies produced by University United, which is down on University in here prior, that clearly demonstrate that a huge disparity exists between, on the one hand, freestanding businesses where often small businesses are housed, compared to the strip malls where it's generally the chains and the companies, the international companies that have the mall stores, or comparing the freestanding buildings again to the skyscrapers and the big buildings downtown. There's a huge discrepancy. Now, I understand that there's been an objection from somebody from the Minnesota Business Partnership that wants to raise the issue about small businesses leasing in large businesses that would be affected. I think that's a very valid point.
Hosted, I apologize, but I want to leave about 5 minutes for the other side, if I could, so we can have even here. So if you could brief off in about 30 seconds.
Okay.
I apologize, but we're running short. So
fine.
Thank you.
Anyway, I think that particular issue can be solved, and as we just did some research, I think what we can do is simply make allowances for the small businesses and the big ones. I want to thank Representative Bradley for bringing forth this bill, because lightening the burden of property tax on small business is very important. The Metropolitan Independent Business Alliance has not taken a formal position on this bill. However, we are eager to work with all of you to bring about positive, productive change to strengthen small business and to create new jobs. Leveling the playing field with regard to tax policy is an important element of helping small business and helping do what they have always done, which is to create economic development, employment, and new jobs. I thank you very much.
Mr. Goldstein, thank you very much. How many would like to testify for and against, for or against this bill? I see, Grace, we've got one, a couple. Okay, if you could come forward right now. Each one will get a minute and a half. Is there any questions or comments from the... Representative Mulberry, you've got until we get down here after the question.
Mr. Chair, my question is real quick, just a one-word answer. Is it true, the rumor, that Chair Lencheski is bringing a keg of Guinness tonight for the meeting?
Representative Mulberry, we're not going to put that on the record.
Let's
all right, please proceed. Whoever wants to go first, good. We've got 4 minutes left.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jill Larson from the Minnesota Business Partnership. He already gave my testimony, so no, I'm kidding. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have two concerns with this bill. One is that simple fact that it is a $68 million shift onto any property that's valued above $150,000, and that's a lot of property. So the statewide property tax was put in place to have all businesses contribute to the general fund. And I'm concerned that once we start sort of carving it up and, you know, making little exceptions here and there, that it creates some real discrepancies. And secondly, and I think Tom will probably talk more about this, is that there are several small businesses that are tenants in buildings that are valued above $150,000, and they will pay this increased tax. Most of these people have leases that require that any new increased fee or tax is passed directly through to those tenants. So, you know, you have the capacity that you're pitting some small businesses against others. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I agree with Ms. Larson's comments. And the only thing I'll add to that is that there is a different way of providing businesses some direct property tax relief, and that's reducing the amount of the statewide property tax levy. If you're looking to provide relief, I think that's a much better way to do so than carving out a certain segment of the business community for relief. Because really, all businesses need property tax relief, not just smaller companies. And obviously, given the current budget situation, that might not be possible this year, but I think we should continue to look at making progress in reducing that levy. That's the most direct lever that the state has to adjust the level of business property taxes in the state.
Thank you very much. Anyone else from the audience care to testify for or against House File 467? Representative Daffy, closing comments.
Mr. Chair and members, I appreciate this consideration. I do think while there are some challenges in the implementation, I think sending a strong message that the state values small businesses and is willing to work with our main streets across the state would be an important message to send in these difficult economic times. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ian, for your testifiers. So. All right, I will renew the motion to lay over House File 467 for possible inclusion in the division report. We've got one more thing to do. We have to approve the minutes of March 11th. Would anyone care to move those? Representative Dietrich moves the approval of the March 11th, 2009 minutes. Are you discussing? If not, I'm going to call for a vote on those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. And members, we're adjourned. And we do have a joint meeting tonight at 6 p.m. as mentioned earlier.